All right, you clicked play and you got me. See how that works? Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. Very special podcast this week. I'm going to get to that in a second. But before I do, I'm going to be doing stand-up September 22nd and 23rd at Brokerage Comedy Club, Governors, Belmore, Long Island, September 22nd, 23rd. Always a great time there. Love going back. Audiences are great. So come on out, tell your friends, bring a crew. Have a good time. And then September 28th to October 1st, I'm going to be at Go Bananas Comedy Club in Cincinnati, Ohio. You know it's going to be good because Bananas is in the name. It's Go Bananas Comedy Club, Cincinnati, September 28th to October 1st. And this is a special Emmy Award edition of our podcast that I recorded with a great, great director and acting coach and a dear friend, Bob Krakauer. We recorded this before the Emmy Awards because we wanted you guys to get a sense of what these awards are all about, the history, etc. And Bob makes some picks as to who he thinks is going to win. So enjoy this. This is a special one that we're posting on a special day. And give us some feedback on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. Let us know how you enjoyed it. And we'll see you soon. All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's podcast. This is a special one. I've never done this before. And it's with a dear, dear friend, incredibly talented and the nicest man on the planet. This is someone who's been on my podcast before. And he is a major director and acting coach. He's the preeminent acting coach in the country, used on the East and West Coast. I'm going to look at it as I say this. I'm making him uncomfortable because I'm looking at it. Used on the East and West Coast by major studios. He's worked on Emmy Award-winning shows, award-winning plays, films, and has worked with the likes of Josh Duhamel, John Slattery, Laurie Metcalf, my friends, Louis C.K., Louis Black. And this is the great, and I don't use that word lightly, Bob Krakauer.
Thank you, Paul.
So Bob and I started talking about the Emmys just off the cuff.
Right.
And we were like, and Bob had the idea, you know, it might be fun to do an Emmy Award show where we talk about what they mean, the significance, how they came about. Because I had you on before because I wanted people to hear what really, from someone who knows what acting really is, how difficult it is, and what people have to do. And I got amazing response from that by people in the business and outside of the business. And so I feel like this is a nice sort of sister episode to that because now we're getting into the creative, beyond the creative, but the business aspect of it through the lens of award shows.
Right.
So that's kind of the backstory on why we're doing this. And we're going to cover history of Emmys and so forth and so on. And then we're going to talk about your picks for the Emmys. We were talking a little bit off air about the history just of award shows in general.
Right.
And the Academy Awards in particular as a starting point.
Right. So one of the reasons I wanted to do this with you, and you've been with us in class, so you know, is that, you know, actors, especially young actors, put a lot of stock in these awards. And it becomes, it's not hard to ascertain after a certain amount of time that they actually don't really know what they are, and how they work and why they exist. And that's what you and I were talking about. The Academy Awards, for example, were born because Louis B. Mayer, who was then the head of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer at MGM, was trying to build a house. he was trying to build a house for himself in Santa Monica on the beach, right? Like, everybody thinks the Academy Awards is this very prestigious thing, which it is in a sense, but
it didn't start out that way.
It didn't start out that way. It was sort of by accident. And even now, right, when people win Academy Awards, Louise Fletcher, never heard from her again. Where's Hilary Swank? Don't know. Adrienne Brody, what happened after? It isn't actually.
And I want to talk about why, but we can get that later.
So Louis B. Mayer was trying to build a house for himself and his family in Santa Monica. And so in those days, he would simply hire the crews from MGM Studios, the construction guys and the electric guys and the light guys.
It's like if I own my own company, I had a landscaper that did the lawn at the company. I have him come by the house. And
come by the house.
Here's
and
a couple of bucks, whatever. Yeah.
And build a house for me.
And build a house for me on the weekends.
On the weekends.
And don't screw it up.
Because everybody kept telling him the house would take a long time to build. And he was like, we build houses in 2 days on the lot. How hard could it be? So he was hiring these guys. And his head of production, who I think at that time was Irving Thalberg, sort of alerted him to the fact that a lot of these, they were all men mostly at that point, some women in hair and makeup and such, but that the beginnings, the rumblings had started to unionize all the skilled positions that work on a movie.
And roughly what year are we talking about?
27, 28, right. Somewhere in 1927, 28. And that if he wanted those guys to go to the house, that they probably would have to ask for, you know, a lot of money that would correspond with what they would get when the union was finalized. This is actually the beginning of the Yahtzee in the Yahtzee union in the entertainment business. So Mayer was like, well, shit. I'm like, God, I can't do that. So Thalberg said, well, just have the construction, the foremans, just bring the bosses, the management team, and have them do it. And then they'll hire, you know,
Some local. They'll go to the Home Depot of the 1920s and find some Mexicans.
Exactly. Go down to the local railroad tracks and clean out a car or whatever.
Get Tom Joden.
And bring them all in. So he does that. And while he's that weekend, he's talking to the guys in his studio. And it occurs to him that if all the backstage people are going to unionize, what's going to happen with the writers, directors, and producers? And he was like, oh, I don't want them to unionize. So he comes up with this idea to start a select group, a very special group. And he goes to all the sort of stars of that time, Mary Pickford, Douglas Fairbanks Jr.
And he's also concerned about the on-air talent, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. He's concerned about they're going to catch wind of this thing. Just out of curiosity, who was behind the movement to unionize the carpenters and electricians and all of those guys?
No, I don't know the name of that person. Hmm.
That's fascinating. So so now he's worried that the creatives are going to start catching wind of this. And
they're going to want to unionize. So he invites like the 30 top people to a meeting and says, here, look, here's the deal. We're going to start a group. I'm going to pay you guys a lot of money. And in return, you won't start a union, right? Because he figures, like in today's parlance, if he can feed the top 1%,
yeah,
that they won't bother to lead a movement against him. Remember, there's only 6 movie studios at that time, right? There's MGM, Warner Brothers, Universal, Paramount, Fox, and I'm leaving one out.
And a guy who's an extra on a Western is not going to have clout to unionize. So you need those big boys to and women, yeah.
Right. So he headed them off at the pass, and he had to come up with a name for this thing that he had invented. And he came up, he thought it should sound very official, and he also thought that the writers and directors and actors would, you know, want it to sound special. So he called it what it's called, the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences. And they were like, oh, that's great. Yeah. Let's do that. And we're going to get paid a lot of money. Yeah, absolutely. And Douglas Fairbanks said, well, how is anybody going to know we're a special group? And Louis B. Mayer was like, well, shit.
I didn't think of that.
I didn't think of that. Well, what do we give you guys? Some awards. And they were like, that sounds good. So the first Academy Awards, the winners knew 3 months beforehand. Because basically the studio has, the 30 of them sat around and went, that's best picture, you'll be best actor, I'll be best actress. They nominated themselves.
They got a table in the back of a restaurant.
I think they actually met at the Roosevelt Hotel, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
And they figured it out.
So no secret ballots, no Ernst & Young coming with a handcuffed briefcase.
Bring another bottle of wine and you can be best actor. It was kind of like that. And then word about it leaked out. And so they decided they had to have some sort of ceremony, which they did, which was short. It was like 20 minutes and here's your award and let's go have dinner.
Nobody's playing anybody off because they're going over on this
like,
speech.
No, nobody was like, hey, thank you. And that was it.
try the veal. No, seriously, try the veal. I just had it.
And don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. and I can't, I think Wings, was it Wings was the first? I think it was Wings, was the first best picture. But what happened was the studio then advertised it as the best picture of the year. And lo and behold, people bought more tickets.
Because they thought some people
somebody
who really
said
knew
it was
shit,
best picture of the year.
Some guy on a right in the back of a restaurant.
In the back of a restaurant. So then the heads of the studios are like, well, fuck, that's great. Let's do it again next year. And thus the Academy Awards were born. And the Academy Awards, like to get into the motion picture arts and sciences, you have to be invited. What people don't realize is like there's like 6,000 members. That's it. Right? That's it. There's not. You know.
Yeah, that's what blew me away when we started talking about this. Like, there was just, I had the sense, and I work in this business, that it was hundreds of thousands of people that were.
No. Now, the Television Academy, which was started in the late 40s by
Sid Kassid. In 1949.
Right.
Yeah.
He decides because television, they're afraid that television won't catch. That it won't beat the movies. So he starts the Television Academy.
Right. And he was initially, it was the hope of getting these people together as a serious forum.
Yes.
To discuss their medium and where it's going, because it was in its nascent stages. And they weren't getting any help from the motion picture industry, who didn't want to give them any, you know, because they were now fighting for. So he's. He's got this baby that he's trying to get off the ground, just like Mayer
right.
did.
But in his case, as you said, he had very serious aspirations. Right. And then he realized that nobody gave a shit. So the board of governors, which was like five of his friends, said, look, man, we're going to have to give out some awards.
In the same restaurant, in the same room.
We're going to have to give out some awards. And so I think it was 1949. Yeah, I think it was the first Emmy Awards.
Yeah. And the first, and then when the Emmy was made, the one that we know now was given to a 20-year-old ventriloquist from UCLA. That was the first winner of that award. The first maiden voyage of that, I swear to God. And so here we have sort of money
right.
driving this thing that seems to be something else, but it's not.
But it's not. It's presented as some sort of meritocracy,
right?
Which it isn't. But what's confusing about it is there is some merit involved. Like you're not going to vote for just anybody. It's not the Golden Globes where Pia Zadora is going to walk away
right.
with a statue. It's not that. Right, but it also isn't. First of all, I think it goes without saying that anything that is vaguely artistic to decide what the best one is subjective on a good day.
Right? Right.
If you're a lawyer, which you were, and if you were right, and you had 100 cases and you won 100 cases, you'd be a good lawyer, regardless of what your personality was like.
Right, exactly.
But obviously, that's not true here. But the issue of it is that unlike the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences, pretty much anybody can join the TV Academy, television.
See, that
Academy.
I didn't know either.
Yes. Anybody can join. However, their stipulation is that you have to have 8 principal credits in the previous 4-year period.
And define a principal credit?
Well, that's hard to do, isn't it? Because a series lead, obviously, is a,
yeah.
right? Is if you had 4 recurring parts, is that, I don't know, but that's decided by the membership committee. So even within that, it's a little unclear. So even given that, there are only 22,000 members of the Television Academy.
That blew me away, too.
Right. And there are 30 disciplines in it. So actors, directors, writers, choreographers, sound, lights, editing, so forth, so on, costume, makeup. There's 30 divisions.
Right.
Right? And here's how the voting works. Okay? First of all, if you want to be considered for an Emmy, you have to submit yourself. And you have to choose the episode of television that you are submitting.
And that is a very important process. Being on The Daily Show, Colbert Report, and now The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, there are literally people at the network whose job it is to essentially do that, or at least around this time of year, like just because you got it's a big bit. You're putting your resume out.
Right.
And so they take it very seriously.
Well, they take it very seriously because for the winners, there's a pot of money at the end of the rainbow. And in television, that pot of money is mostly for the networks themselves, which we'll get to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it is very serious.
Right.
When there's money around, there's shit gets real.
There's no fucking around.
No fucking around. So now you have 22,000 members in 30 disciplines. So let's just, we're going to talk about the actors, right? The actors are the largest group of that. But even given that,
right?
How many are there? 11,000, 10,000, 12,000. It's just not a lot of people. So you have to submit yourself, right? And the episodes, okay? And then everybody votes for their favorite one. And the top 5, 6, 7 vote-getters get nominations.
But there are parameters in terms of who can vote.
Right. Writers vote for writers. Directors vote for directors. Actors vote for actors. Choreographers, so forth, down the line. Everybody can vote for best comedy, best drama, best miniseries. So, for example, in the actors category, right, what are the chances that 12,000 people are going to watch all the episodes? should we say slim or should we go ahead and say none?
None. Even with digital and DVRs and all this other stuff, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So that's why there's campaigning. Right, people think it's gauche to campaign for awards. But the truth of the matter is there's no way for people to watch all the episodes. So then what are they basing it on? And this is where you get into the old phrase that Hollywood is high school with money, right? Because they vote for their friends.
But it's not high school. What it is I look at it as the studios and the networks. Basically, I look at it as a form of a marketing budget.
It is marketing.
And so,
budget.
because if you win at the end of that rainbow is literally a pot of gold.
It's literally a pot of gold.
So you're trying to increase your revenue. So it's no different than plastering posters all over the place for your upcoming TV season. So,
absolutely, right. Like on the movie side, right? Have you ever heard of the production company A24?
It rings a bell.
Right. Here's why it rings a bell. They've produced over 60 movies.
Really?
You've never heard of any of them until they produced a little movie called Moonlight.
Jeez, they produced that?
Right. And so now you know who their production, now you know who they are. Don't you think that helps them when they go to do the next movies? The finances on this is on average, give or take, winning a best picture, best actor increases a film's revenue by about $14 million. At the box office. That's before it gets to iTunes or Amazon or any of the other things.
Right.
But there's a kicker too, because if you look at Netflix or if you look at iTunes, right, and you're looking for a movie to watch, there'll be categories that say
Award winning. Oscar.
Right. So,
and they usually put that at the top. You ain't gonna bury that.
No, they don't. Right.
You're not and burying
so,
the lead.
So that's why people campaign and are willing to spend money, because if it works, they make a lot more money at the end.
Yeah.
Right. Even Louis C.K., who's, you know, not somebody who will campaign for awards, when he did Horace and Pete, he had no advertising budget, right? As you know, right? He released it on his website.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the actors and actresses that he got to do that, right? He talked about this on a podcast with a Hollywood reporter. He promised them, one of the things he promised them was they wouldn't have to do any press. He would never ask them to go sell the show. However, once the show came out, understandably, and as he said, he knew this would happen, Hulu, Netflix, Amazon wanted to buy it. And then he started to campaign for Laurie Metcalf and Alan Alda and Steve Buscemi.
As a form of marketing.
As a form of marketing, and in part because he's a good guy, and all of the actors that he had hired, all these great actors, were profit participants. So the more he sold the show for, the more money they made. So he was more than happy. Like, he didn't do any ads, but he did these podcasts like Hollywood Reporter, Variety, and so forth and so on. Mm. So that's the value of it. Mm-hmm. So now you're back. Okay. They didn't watch all the shows.
Right.
Okay. Now they announce the Emmys. Mm-hmm. Okay. And there's 5, 6, 7. Let's say there's 7 nominees. There's some, there's 5, some there's 6, right. Some there's 7. Well, for example, if you have 7 nominees, right? Okay. And then there's, so now you have the nominees, and now there's a voting period. I think it's 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. In order for you to honestly assess 12,000 actors, honestly assessing, you would have to watch, give or take, 84 different shows.
Right. That's a lot of shows. That's a lot of not spending time with your family.
That's a lot of shows.
That's losing a social life.
That's taking your vote really seriously. So
I could just see a guy with like a grid, like a big whiteboard, right. And he's got everything. And
check.
Bob, I got tickets to the Giants game. I'm almost done with my grid.
I have to watch one more episode of This Is Us.
We have an intervention for you.
Right. So, but let's say like in a category, we have 7 nominees.
Yeah.
Statistically, what that means is the winner can win with only 14% of the vote.
And let's talk about, you sent me an email and you never brag. You weren't bragging. You nailed 3 out of 4 in the acting category of the creative Emmys.
Now,
creative Emmys happen a week before the Emmys. So they happened last weekend. And the, and these are sort of, as Bob said, he had 4 categories that he picked. Guest actor in a comedy, guest actress in a drama, guest actress in a comedy, and guest actor in a drama. So he got the actors and actresses, comedy, drama, and you got 3 out of 4 right.
Correct.
You got for guest actress for SNL, Melissa McCarthy.
Right.
And guest actress for a drama, Alexis Beadle. And for guest actor comedy, my friend Dave Chappelle for his SNL appearance. But you're such a loser. You missed the guest actor drama, man.
I know. I did. I got the right show, This Is Us, but I got the wrong actor.
Yeah. Now, how were you able to do that?
Okay. So if you're not watching all the shows, right, then what are you basing your vote on?
Right.
Right.
Word of mouth.
And now you get into why campaigns are important.
Because I'm sitting at the bus stop, I'm not just going to say, hey, did you see whatever? My focus is the Emmy last night that so-and-so just won and blah, blah, blah.
Right. So if you're looking at this list, for instance, Alex Beadle, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Handmaid's Tale, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other shows are How to Get Away with Murder. That's been on for a while. No buzz.
Right.
Right. The Leftovers. Pretty much nobody's seen it.
Right.
Orange is New Black. Some people don't even know it's still on the air. And then Shannon Purser from Stranger Things. I love actors. I really do. I have nothing bad to say about them. Really, I don't. But that's the one name on this list that I'm like, you have to be fucking kidding me. She played Barb on Stranger Things. She had very few scenes.
How did she end up on that list?
Because if you follow the internet, which I don't, but my daughter does, you would know that Stranger Things is a very, very popular show, especially in the 18 to 29 age range.
Meanwhile, Jeannie Berlin, who's an unbelievable actress,
in the night of
nothing. So now this is going exactly where I hoped, and we're going to get to it. It's all sort of coming together, digital and the relationship to TV and the importance. So these campaigns take on an even bigger significance once you have digital involved, and that's helping drive some of these shows.
Absolutely. And of course, amazing to me as this is, right, people will believe the buzz of a show because it's on Twitter or wherever it is, right, thinking that, wow, people are really watching this show, not realizing that every major network and studio have their own Twitter account. I mean, they're right. feeding the beast, you know, in camouflage.
Right.
So, you know.
So did you, in picking Alexis, it was maybe, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, and no. you didn't say this to me, it was less about her work, but as much about you logicked through the sort
that
of
show.
The politics. And so now why that show of these shows? Okay, granted, some of these are, you know, Orange is the New Black, kind of not as hot, but still, these are significant shows. Why did that show, did it click in your mind that that was going to be the one?
Because that show, in this current environment, right, and I don't know that you and I want to get into the politics of all that goes on in the world with race and gender and all the rest, yeah. but suffice it to say, it plays a part. That show... is an incredibly popular show with a lot of buzz that people feel is an important story to tell about women and about mm-hmm. women's role in the society. And the chances that you've seen any of those other people this year in their shows...
This ties up that right. point. So it's... literally a case of right place, right time, and for Alexis, taking nothing away
taking
from her
nothing
work.
Away from her. And that's why I'm saying the merit part of this is, with the one exception of Ms. Purser, which I don't understand, there isn't anybody on this list that you would go, Jesus Christ, who let them in the room?
Right.
I mean, it's a group of terrific actors all in all.
And this is why we're doing this, especially for the actors and creative people out there who work in this business, to help put the significance of awards in perspective, and right. maybe so you're not feeling shitty about yourself that you're not on this, you're not, or you, but because here is a crystal clear example of how Bob logicked through this based on the business aspect of this business
right.
to arrive at the right answer for this.
Right. Like, it's a no-brainer that Melissa McCarthy was going to win guest actress. I mean, you know, I think they know it in Slabovia.
right. Most people didn't have to see it, but can probably recite lines from four of her movies.
That's right. Well, or if they haven't seen it, they've seen a clip of it somewhere.
How does an upset happen, though? Like, so let's say in that category, right. it wasn't. What happened? How?
How does an upset happen?
Yeah.
Now, remember, if you have seven nominees, you only have to come away with 14% of the vote to win. That's a very low bar. If you have five nominees, I guess it's 21%.
And we're talking actor category 12,000
right.
people, right?
So what ends up happening when surprises happen is that somewhere along the line, there's usually two people that split a vote. So for example, on Feud, we have Jessica Lange and Susan Sarandon. They're going to end up
splitting the vote.
Oh, they may end up canceling each other out.
And right? so someone who truly was going to be second slips into first.
First, it becomes a statistical anomaly because of that reason. I'm not saying that they will or won't win. That's not my point.
Right, that they're not deserving. You're just saying
right.
Yeah.
It's just that what happens is usually somebody sneaks through
right.
when two people cancel each other right. out.
Now,
that's
Dave
how Abraham
Chappelle-
Lincoln won the election in 1860.
Dave Chappelle, same reason.
Dave Chappelle,
Dave Chappelle.
Again, even if you didn't see the monologue that he did on that show, even if you didn't see the sketch he did with Chris Rock, you heard about it.
Right.
You didn't have to see it.
Right.
And he's Dave Chappelle.
Right.
So, and in the other category where I got it wrong, right, is that Brian?
Mm-hmm. You thought it was going to be Brian,
and here's why. Because Atlanta is a very well-respected show. It's an African-American show. It's a really funny show. It's a really smart show. And he wasn't nominated for the part that he plays in that show where he's one of the leads. So I thought, well, they'll give him love in this other category.
Oh, it's kind of like when someone doesn't get the best director the year they should get it, they get him the second year.
They get him,
kind of
right.
as a, yeah.
Or they win the writing award.
Right.
So That's why I thought he would get some love there.
And what happens when, so you have these categories, you have these limited number of people voting, and we circle back now to outside of these specific categories to, so let's say, best show, where 22,000 people can vote. Again, it circles back to this practical reality. Did these 22,000 people see all of these shows?
No.
And they did not.
Of course not. And so when people complain about campaigning, they don't understand that there's a void. And the networks know that, the studios know that, everybody knows that, right? So This Is Us, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're pushing This Is Us really, really hard. Now, why is that, right? The reason is because the networks have been taking a beating at the Emmy Awards. And
right.
This Is Us is a network show, right?
Right.
So Chrissy Metz, again, wonderful on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody's seen the show. And if they have, they may not have seen the episode that she submitted.
Right.
But now you see her on The View or whatever show she's on, and she's telling you the story about how she'd pretty much given up acting and she was living in her car. And then this audition came up and it changed her life. And now it's such a blessing. That's a great story. That's a great story.
Also, right? A little bit of right place, right time. She has weight issues. That's in the zeitgeist right now in terms of fat shaming women, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely.
So,
which takes nothing away from her acting at all.
Right.
But, you know, if you wanted to feel good about your vote with a little extra zest, you might do that. Again, taking literally nothing away from her. She's wonderful.
Right.
But you can't overlook the politics of the moment. Right? You just can't. And to think that it doesn't matter is naive and a little silly.
Right.
By the way, that works for some people and against other people. I mean, it goes both ways.
And there's a double-edged sword regarding digital, because while it can help something go viral, it can keep people from seeing stuff because they're inundated with data and information and forms of entertainment, podcasts and web series and this and that. And Stephen Battaglio of the LA Times said, we have all these new platforms now. You need awards, and you need the biggest award of all, the Emmy, to sustain your program, to get in front of the public. There are going to be so many shows that get exposure on the Emmy Saturday night, and those are the ones that will benefit from it.
Correct.
And there's no turning back.
No. No, there's no turning back. And again, I want to be perfectly clear about something. I don't have a judgment about this one way or the other. It just is what it is. Everybody has a job to do, right?
Right.
You know, I teach, you act, you write.
Mm-hmm.
Well, somebody's in marketing, and that's their job.
Right.
Right? The head of a studio, they have a lot to answer for.
Right.
And it certainly doesn't hurt their day to win an Emmy.
Right.
Right? The difference is, in film, the individual winners are the beneficiaries.
And well, I thought in film, on average, $14 million kicks.
Yes, but the individuals, over a longer period of time, if it's managed correctly, find themselves with better offers and better parts and better deals and better this and better
but
that.
But now let's circle back to earlier where you mentioned an Adrian Brody, etc.
And it works against you. Here's what happens. You win that award, and your agency, such as it is, decides you're now a star.
Right.
So they put you in star vehicles. Cuba Gooding Jr. is a good example. And you're in two or three bombs in a row. Now you're screwed.
You're in worse position than if you had stayed in that status for which you supporting actor and just chugged along.
Right. Mira Sorvino, anybody? Like, what happened there? you know what I mean? And yet somebody like Marissa Tomei wins an Oscar, and she's patient. She takes a step back. She's selective.
Right.
She uses it to her advantage rather than be used by it.
Well, you know, that's analogous to comedians who get development deals, which really don't happen anymore.
Right.
But the highway is strewn with comedians who had big development deals and they went nowhere because they put themselves in the hands of a manager/agent.
Right.
And there's maybe five good managers, and one of them is Larry Shapiro, our good friend.
Right.
And I really mean that. Well, he's my manager, but thanks to you. But right. he's seasoned. He's smart. He's a lawyer. There ain't a lot of those guys and women.
No.
So now this guy, I get a development deal. I go to Montreal Comedy Festival and I get a $500,000 development deal. Sue Costello is a good example. Very, very
Sue
funny.
Sue Costello is a great example.
And you know, I just think these people don't. They have the wrong people in their corner in terms of being able to advise them creatively. They don't have the chops yet to be able to know what's right for them, what's not right for them. If you have 15 solid minutes and you can kill, you can get a development deal at the time. And ain't no way if you only have 15 minutes have you figured out yourself as a performer on stage and a person.
Right.
And so your development deal goes away, and then people go, you know, he's kind of over there. And then you kind of have to reinvent yourself.
Right. And, you know, Adrian Brody's a great example. I don't know anything about him at all. I've never met him. I don't know anything about him. He's wonderful in the movie The Piano. But that was a Holocaust movie by Roman Polanski. You think maybe that had something to do with why people voted? You know what I mean?
Right.
Again, taking nothing away from
it. No, but there's certain things that like...
Right.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. You do a 9/11 film...
People are going to pay attention, and if it's any good, they're going to want to vote for it.
Yeah.
And again, I think that's what it is. In other words, to think it's something else is just silly. It is what it is. And... You know, one of the things, like Jay Leno tells a great story about how he ended up as the guest host of The Tonight Show, right? As he tells the story, there was a bunch of hot comics. They all had sort of the same manager. The manager decided to go and say, you know, we're not going to do The Tonight. They were all being considered for the guest host. And the manager was like, I'm going to them. Whoever gets this is getting $25,000 a night. And Jay Leno said, well, that's good. But I'm going to take the $512 that they're offering,
which is union standard money.
Which is standard. And as Jay Leno says, and they hired me. Well, of course they hired me. I was $512 a night. Like, he's not thinking, oh, I'm better than everybody else. He gets it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So people don't understand the finances of the thing, and when they do think about it or understand it, they think about the business part of show business as something terrible and ugly and awful.
Right.
Well, I don't know that it is or isn't.
But it's something you've got to live with.
But
you picked this.
Yeah. Because, you know, if you're NBC right now and you have a show like This Is Us and it can win Best Show or a couple of Emmys, what ends up happening, this is what I was saying earlier, is it then brings people to your network. Right, it's like HBO. The HBO, if it wins, well, however many Emmys it wins, will run an ad the next day. HBO, winner of 12 Emmy Awards.
Right.
So the same thing that's true about a movie, if it wins an award, you'll come see it. The same that's true about an actor is true about a network. But the network has more to gain because, remember, especially on cable, it's a subscription. That's how they live and die.
Right.
So if you're the biggest winner on the night of the Emmys,
your subscription is going to go up significantly.
It's going to go up significantly.
I mean, that's why Netflix is sort of
absolutely.
It's become a monster, they're throwing money around,
right?
And all the big stars are taking it. So, what this idea of because I think it relates, putting a star in a vehicle that's not necessarily made for that star, right? I understand there's a risk-averse nature of this business, like all businesses, and people think, okay, I got this sitcom, and it's really perfect for Paul Mercurio, but if I can get Jason Bateman, who I think is brilliant in it, let's get Jason Bateman, but Jason Bateman's not right for it, and I'm perfect for it. He's going to get it every time.
Not every time.
But most of the time.
But most of the time.
Explain to people why.
So it depends who... is in charge and who has clout. So I'll give you an example. The movie The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
The studio wanted, I believe there were one of two people they wanted, or maybe both of them, Scarlett Johansson or Natalie Portman. And I could be wrong about this, but I believe that Natalie Portman may have bought the book in Galley, or she had some ownership stake in it, maybe. I could be wrong about
mm-hmm.
that. David Fincher wanted this young actress he had worked with in Social Network called Rooney Mara. And that was like, there's no fucking way. I mean, who the fuck is she? And his point was, Right. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, though, can't be a Natalie Portman movie. Like, that girl's got to be a blank slate.
For the viewer.
For the viewer and for the story to work.
Right.
And they so they fought that battle back and forth till the bitter end.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Fincher went out. I don't know why he went out or how he went out or how that went down. But that was you had a fight for that.
Right.
TV, I was a casting director for, oh my God, I can't even believe I did it, for 3 years in television.
Did you just throw up in your mouth
a
little bit?
Just a little bit. And what happens at networks is, as you know, there's a revolving door of executives over and over,
right,
and over again. And it's easier for them to put a name in a show. It's easier.
It covers their ass.
It covers their ass. It's easier with their board of directors. It's easier with their stockholders. It's easier with their parent company.
And by what we mean by cover their ass is the show last six episodes is canceled.
Right.
And they call Bob in and say, Bob, why did you, well, I got, you know, I got Kelsey Grammer. That, yeah, it was just right, not meant to be. But if you have to go in and go, that thing tanked because you put Paul Mercurio in, like, then so that it's protecting their own job.
Right. Because I think what people don't understand about executives, especially in the entertainment business, is by and large, they don't want responsibility. They want deniability.
And
they
want to
be able to say, right.
Yeah.
They want to be able to say.
That's such a great line. They don't want responsibility. They want deniability.
They want to be able to say, you know, well, you know, if the show is a success, Paul and I have a very special relationship. We understand each other.
Right.
He's an artist, and I understand his art,
right,
and we go together. If the show's a failure, it's like, I don't know. I asked for the – he didn't deliver. He didn't deliver.
Right.
I did my job.
Right.
He didn't deliver.
But see, this is where for the creatives in this business and you know, we were just talking about how people who work in this business especially think the business side of it is a dirty word. But this is where there's an intersection of art and commerce,
right,
that don't mesh, because if this – I do stand up for a living. I've done stand up literally all over the world. I'm not bragging. I'm just making,
right,
a point of, like, people are intuitively smart. My father was high school educated, put floors in for a living. He read the paper. He could tell if you were bullshitting a mile away. Doesn't matter how good you are, right?
Right.
They're not, may not be IQ smart, but they, and my point is, if you have a vehicle and you jam a star in there because they're a star, they're not going to fucking watch it. They're not going to stay for a show just because, oh, look at the shiny object. I got this big star that you know. And and so this is where I think frustration comes in for talent, for writers, directors, et cetera. Like, okay, a decent amount of time, I won't say all the time, the business isn't being served properly, because if it were, they would take the better choice for the art and they would get the outcome that they want.
Right. And they do that more on cable, right? Now, and again,
which is why it's winning awards, and same,
correct,
with Netflix and all that, right?
Right. Like, I've worked on several HBO shows. I don't know that I've heard an executive say so much as, you know, can I have another cup of coffee? I mean, they just don't.
They leave them alone.
They leave them alone. Like, they put a lot of effort. A lot of effort and a lot of intelligence and a lot of care into who they hire to do what, and then they let them do their thing.
Right.
But they don't have to sell commercials. It's a completely different business model,
right?
Right, and therefore, people who tend to, you know, people who are really good at their job and who have a certain amount of clout are going to go to cable where they can do their thing. I mean, that just makes sense. If you're Kevin Spacey, and Netflix comes to you and says, we'd like you to produce and be in this show, that's way better than if the exact same show was on ABC, where they have no choice but to meddle in it as their commercial 30 seconds value goes up and down.
Hmm.
They can't, and you can't blame them for that. That's their job.
But hang on.
Yeah.
If you don't meddle and you trust it, okay, like Doug Herzog was the president of Comedy Central.
Right.
He greenlit and had a hand in creating The Daily Show,
right,
which I worked on. He didn't put a limit order on the show. And for a limit order, for people listening, means they order a show and say, let's greenlight a budget for 13 episodes and see where it goes, and then,
right,
we'll assess. He didn't do that because he had the good business sense and artistic sense to know this was a new animal. There was really nothing like it yet, and it had to figure itself out. Literally, we had to figure out how to do the show, what the voice of the show was. And my point is, okay, so that was Comedy Central a while ago. They could afford to do it.
I worked for Doug for 2 years at MTV, right?
Right.
And I remember those MTV days. I remember Bill Bellamy walking in the office and go, I have an idea for a show on a Monday. On Thursday, he was in the studio.
Right.
And
so that so where we are is then, I feel, I might disagree a little bit with you, ABC could afford not to meddle so much, and ABC, any broadcast network, and trust that with a little bit of time, that thing is going to grow into the numbers that they need from advertising.
Right, but the advertisers are the ones who won't give them the time. And then you have to have somebody who really believes in the show, right? The advertisers immediately start to pull.
Revenue goes down.
Money go down.
You're getting a call from the CEO of the holding company.
You get a call from the CEO of Ford Motor Company saying we're pulling our ads from the show. Right. So, you know, that's the business out there.
And is that, to stay on this track in our theme of the show of awards, is that the reason mainly that broadcast networks are not winning the level of kind of awards that cable and digital is winning?
Yeah, because the broadcast network, by the definition, broadcast, has no choice in its business model but to try to appeal to the most number of people that they can.
Yeah.
Whereas The Daily Show, how many people watched it at the beginning?
Under a million.
Right. Yeah. But once it went over a million, it was probably the most people that watched any Comedy Central show.
Yeah, that and South Park.
Okay,
South
good.
Park was
and South Park,
sorry,
right. South Park was a hurricane. Yeah. Right. So, bad week to say that. So... So if you're Doug Herzog and you have, I'm making this number up because I don't know the numbers, 300,000 subscribers, and then you add The Daily Show in South Park, and you go to 400,000 subscribers, you're a genius.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I worked on the show Power for Starz, right? It's breaking all kinds of records for Starz. If it was on a network, it would have been canceled in 2 episodes.
Why?
Because the numbers... at Starz, if it hits, well, I'm making this number up because I don't know the numbers. If it hits 3 million people, they're fucking thrilled.
Okay, but let's talk about the advertisers for a second, because they're no dummies, okay?
No.
I know everybody wants to shit. Okay, you guy becomes CEO of Colgate Palmolive or whatever it is, or General Mills or whatever. You ain't a dummy.
Right.
The woman, the guy, whoever it is. If I'm investing my money in advertising, yeah, on network television, I'm going to make sure either I or my lieutenants understand that business so that I understand what I'm investing in.
Right.
So they should either be self-educated or educated or smart enough to know if we stay patient and keep feeding money for this episode. I know you're looking at me like this is
right,
your...
because everybody has a boss.
Okay.
And they have to respond to that person.
Yeah, I think the businesses can take more risk in that sense and trust.
It can, but the person at the Seinfeld, as you know, is a great example, right?
Right. Put it on the summer, took it off, put it back on.
But Warren Littlefield had to put his ass on the line to keep the show on. Like that, again, I don't think the people that run networks, it's easy to run them down, but they don't get the credit they deserve, right?
Mm.
For when they, because when Seinfeld isn't working, right, Warren Littlefield has to report to a board of directors as to why he's occupying valuable airtime with this show that nobody's
watching.
No,
I get that. And I don't like bashing that word either. But
no,
that board of directors who is looking at the bottom line and then gets phone calls from the head of Ford, those guys and women and the head of Ford should understand the better way to be in this business is to be a little bit more patient and let things percolate. Not all of them. You want to have some hits right away. And that's a disconnect for me.
It is. And the disconnect comes like this. The stock price goes down on your company.
Right.
Like on Viacom, let's say. And all hell breaks loose. So those folks are, again, I mean, we're not throwing a telethon for them. I mean, they're fine.
Right.
But they're under an immense amount of pressure.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing when you come to these awards, right? This Is Us winning Emmys is really important to NBC.
Right.
And they're fucking out there trying everything they can.
Right.
Now, but and you think it's aimed at you. It isn't. It's aimed at the 12,000 people or 20,000 people who are voting.
This goes back because people
don't
have time to watch.
Because they don't have time to watch the shows.
Right.
So how are we going to get their attention?
Right.
That's the complexity of what goes into all this stuff.
Right.
It's, right. Robert Redford did a movie called All Is Lost. He was alone in a boat.
Right.
And he told the producers, one of whom I know, he told the producers, I'm not going to, you know, I don't do awards and I don't do anything. And then, okay, fine. He's alone in a boat. What do they care? But it's a very hard movie to produce because it's actually more expensive than you might think.
Why?
Because you have to have a guy in a boat and a large sort of man-made lake. The post sound is one of the most expensive things on the movie, and most of that sound, if not all of it, isn't actually happening while they're shooting. They have to post it in later. So it's not that cheap a movie to make.
Mm.
He gets nominated and reminds them, guys, I told you. And they're furious.
And why doesn't he want a campaign?
Because he's an artist and he's 70 years old.
But wait a minute. He started the Sundance Film Festival and he has a business acumen, obviously.
Right.
I know he started it as an artist, but...
Right. I'm 70 whatever years old.
And I don't fucking...
And I don't fucking do that. I do the movies and I go home. And I told you that up front. And these guys were furious, right? Why? Because if he had campaigned even a little and gotten the movie out there a little, even if it didn't win an award, at least... it would have been on the internet and in people's minds, and you'd see Robert Redford's face, and that's more tickets at the box office, and he wouldn't do it. Now, in his defense, he told them he wouldn't up front, but in their defense, they're like, you know,
We all win here.
Right, we all win. I have these employees and people that got to be paid, and you could have made my life easier by going on Jay Leno.
No pun intended, row the boat a little bit.
Row the boat a little bit. So, but that's why people get upset, because... They have to make their money back.
Right.
And going on Jimmy Fallon or any of these shows is a huge help.
And if you look at these award shows as marketing arms of the industry.
And in defense of the actors, because I've been with actors on these things, they're brutal. Like, one of my guys is at the Toronto Film Festival now. And, you know, it's a shit show. Because he's being run in and out of rooms. He's got to go here. He's got to go there. He said something he thought was funny. It wasn't funny. It got picked up on the internet. You know, literally half an hour after he said it, he's got people in his face going, why did you say that? You know, it's...
Wait, but tell the rest of the story you told in class, because he was working too. So you told him, like, just do your thing and go back to your room. And
I was like, just go back to your room. And he's like, oh, I'm having fun here. I'm like, oh, all right. You know, and then I got a call from him. He was like cowering in a bathroom, like, get me out of here. Right? Because it's hard.
Because at that point, they see you not as an actor, but as another tool...
To generate dollars
to kind of crank the engine.
And I admire the Billy Crudups of the world who, you know, they do what they want and they, whatever. And again, you know, I think that's great.
Right.
And you have to be willing to basically not make a lot of money in order to do that.
Right.
Right. Like when Louis signed his deal with FX, you know, there just wasn't much money there. And in exchange, he got control, which is what he wanted. So that was great.
Yeah.
And if they reach certain benchmarks, then, you know, finances happen.
Okay, but that's a perfect example of he had creative control.
Right.
He was able to make the thing that was Louis, him. It became a hit.
Yeah.
It helped propel him from a club comic who maybe was working theaters and now doing arenas. He did Madison Square Garden 6-8 months ago.
He's a genius.
Okay, now if that had been... And I think FX is less likely to meddle, but let's say it had been a different network where they like to meddle.
It wouldn't have been his show.
It wouldn't have been his show, and there wouldn't be I don't think there'd be a Louis today at that level. Maybe there would be through something else.
Through something else, because he's brilliant.
Yeah.
But the reason not to do that, you know, if you're going to do it on network, you have to basically accept, like if Paul Mercurio writes a pilot based on Paul Mercurio's life, the next thing they're going to do is hire a showrunner.
Right.
To put with you,
right.
Who has his or her own agenda, who wants to write his or her own version of your life.
Right.
And now, you know, it's kind of yours, sort of, maybe 20% yours, 40%.
Right.
Like, as you know, I worked with the thing with Greg Giraldo, which was all about his life. And, you know, the guy that was the showrunner, it became clear, like, partway through the process that he didn't like stand-up comics.
Really?
So, yeah, but he was a successful showrunner. So, like, where was that show going?
Right.
On cable, if I'm at AMC, right?
Yeah.
Like, Mad Men's a good example. Like, nobody was watching AMC. It was nothing. And Matthew Wiener, I can never know how to pronounce his name. You know, he had creative control. The show turned out to be a hit.
Right.
And it put the entire network on the map. But at the time, they had, you know, 5 subscribers, and then suddenly they had 25.
Right. And the awards that it won. And it's funny because Whitney Friedlander, also a writer for Variety, she says, Vince Gilligan always famously said that he owed a lot of success of Breaking Bad, speaking of AMC, to Netflix because it started streaming the show and really getting the attention. He said, she said, a show like The Americans, which has been a favorite, although sadly not as highly rated, is finally getting. So this is where digital now, right. So digital sort of in one way is hurting broadcasting cable, but in another way helping.
It depends which side of the waterfall you're on.
Right, right. And so you take a show like that, like The Americans, and suddenly it's got a second life. All those people involved in that show have a second life.
Correct.
And then it's so forth and so forth and so on and so on.
Right.
And so digital has become, I think it's good because I think it's forcing the creative out of people. And by the way, where did all this creative content come from? Like was it all just on in a warehouse somewhere in Queens and they opened the door? I mean, every time you turn around, there's a really great show on Amazon or Hulu or
it's a golden FX. It really is a golden age of television. It really, really is.
Right.
And part of it is because in a lot of these situations, the people that they hire have freedom to do what they want. Whereas, again, in the network, they have to live and die by the construct of the business that they're in.
And there's also an international component, like the international Emmys
yes.
has become the thing as well because of the Netflix and the Hulus of the world. The domestic business has changed here in America in
right.
terms of TV and film. And now there's international stuff. I went and pitched Netflix, and the first thing that the studio said to me was, they're in 198 countries, so whatever we pitch, it's got to live everywhere.
Right.
And so it's changing the game. But it's also made the international Emmys more important because if those shows get recognized, they right. get bought and brought to America.
Right. And and having the Emmy title on your show and here in this Tower of Babel,
right.
you know, has a chance for it to be recognized. So
right.
so the point of all this is that to me is that I don't think these things are good or bad. I don't really have an opinion or a judgment about it. But But these awards started as and continue to be a marketing tool
right.
for the products that the producers and studios make. And I think that's great. But just keep that in mind the next time you watch somebody holding a statue.
Right. Or you're an actress and you're watching somebody hold a statue and saying, why isn't that me?
Why isn't that me? There's the meritocracy of it. There's nobody on these lists we're about to talk about that's a bad actor. Terrific. Mm-hmm. But why this one wins or that one wins, a lot of it has to do with what's going on.
Well, that was Adrian Brody with the Holocaust. Like, it was this guy's going to win this. Like, you got to vote for the Holocaust.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly a surprise.
Yeah. Not that he wasn't good. But let's talk about the list. Now, we got Best Actress Comedy.
Best Actress Comedy,
mm-hmm.
right? So Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin will probably cancel each other out because they're from the same show.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
Ellie Kemper, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, is a show that very few people have seen.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Pamela Adlon is terrific in Better Things, but it's on FX, and it's not a show that has gained any traction yet.
Mm-hmm.
And, gee, did they announce recently that next year would be Veeps last year? I wonder why they did that right around Emmy time. So I'm going with Julie Louis-Dreyfus.
You're good, Bob Krakauer. Right. You're good.
Supporting actress. Again, these are all wonderful.
Yeah.
Right? Transparent is a show that was hot, and now it's kind of faded in its attention.
Why is that? Because I would have thought that's still the LGBT thing.
I really don't know. It's a very good show.
Yeah.
And with wonderful people on it. But I don't know. But again... Oh, let's see. Who's everybody seen on this? Oh, would it be Kate McKinnon? I mean, even if you've never seen the show.
And again, this gets back to No one has time to see Saturday Night Live, Veep, Transparent, Saturday Night Live, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's, yeah.
Right. And the individual episodes that they submitted, because the episode Leslie Jones submitted may not be the same as the one that Kate McKinnon submitted.
Right. So can there be a canceling out factor there sometimes? Because you have four people from two different shows. You have two from Transparent, two from SNL.
In this case, the only reason I don't think so. Is because of all of these people, Kate McKinnon, again, if you never saw the show.
Well, yeah, she's Hillary Clinton during the election.
She's Jeff Sessions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Best actress in a drama. This is what a great group this is. Right? Viola Davis, she's already won. The show is fading. Right? Kerry Russell, great show, but for whatever reason, never gets any love. Evan Rachel Wood on Westworld. Westworld's going to be the anomaly this year. Westworld is the show that could end up with many things or no things.
Why many?
Because it was a highly critically acclaimed show. Again, not a lot of people watched it, but the people that did loved it. So if you look at the internet.
It gets viral. There's a buzz. Yeah. There's a conversation.
Just as an acting teacher. Claire Foy and The Crown is un-be-fucking-leavable.
Really?
Yeah. Playing that part, it's a very, very hard part to play.
Why?
Because she has to feel everything while appearing to do nothing. Right? As the queen, right? Part of what that story is about is a woman who becomes queen of England at a very early age isn't really prepared for it. And in part out of honor to her father and in part out of honor to the country, feels that every choice she makes in her life from then on is in service of that. That means that she's at odds with her sister over this thing, her husband over that thing. The people around her in that story don't handle the monarchy very well. She's accused of being cold. She's accused of being... So you have to be able to look at her and see what other people see. And at the same time, feel what she's feeling.
Hmm.
And how she does, it's like a magic trick. She's amazing. And I hope she wins. That being said, The Handmaid's Tale is the hot show right now. And Elizabeth Moss was nominated several times for Mad Men and didn't win. And so if people are feeling a little sentimental about Elizabeth Moss, they may vote for her because everybody is talking about that show.
But Claire is the choice for you based on the difficulty of that role.
Yeah, she's that.
You could understand Elizabeth Moss because of that.
Yeah. Supporting actress, Uzo, she's just wonderful. But she's won. And again, that show is on the decline.
Orange is the New Black.
Yeah. Orange is the New Black. Millie Bobby Brown, again, I'm not a fan of Stranger. Let me just say up front, I'm not a fan of Stranger Things.
Why?
Well, to me, it's like the video equivalent of sampling. You know, like on rap songs, they sample other songs.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Stranger Things is basically shot for shot, a combination of Steven Spielberg and Stand By Me, 1980s. The kids are almost the same as they are in Stand By Me. Yeah. There's nothing terribly original about the show. And all you really care about is where's the kid? That's it.
So why is it caught on?
I don't know. I think especially young people look at the way it's shot and think it's really cool and don't realize that these guys have ripped off.
Yeah, because they're so young and they haven't.
Yeah, they don't know. Right. It's like E.T. meets Stand By Me. And they just don't. they don't know.
You said that. Their eyes would glaze over.
Completely glaze over. So you never know. Right. Stranger Things won like 5 creative Emmys, which should be a signal that there's a good chance it'll win Best Show.
Yeah, I wanted to get to that. Same thing with Night Of. It won 5 creative Emmys.
Right.
And that's a signal because it's going to now buzz about, even if it's a creative Emmy, there's going to be conversation, and these people don't see it, so they hear it.
Well, by then the voting has ended, but what it tells you is that in five of the 30 areas, the people in those 5 areas voted for the people on that show. And that what that means is if they won 5 creative Emmys, in 5 different departments, whatever they were, sound like whatever they were, the chances are pretty good that the people that voted for those Emmys will also vote for it as Best Show because they've already expressed a like for the show. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you never know with Millie Bobby Brown. And Thandie Newton is wonderful, just wonderful in Westworld. And Dowd and Samira Lawiley would cancel each other out. I personally think that Chrissy Metz is going to win because I think she's the feel-good story of the year.
And that show's getting pushed, and it's hot.
Getting pushed, and it's a good show, and she's terrific.
Yeah.
Best Actress Limited Series or TV Movie. I think that Jessica Lange and Susan Sarandon will cancel each other out. Felicity Huffman, terrific actress. Same with Reese Witherspoon. But what Nicole Kidman is doing on that show is just outrageous.
You talked about the her just sustaining that.
Right. You have to remember when you're watching this thing, however many, seven episodes, I think it is.
Big Little Lies.
Right. Think of how many months that is that she's had to sustain that level of intensity.
Yeah.
And every day she comes to work, right, and you shoot out a sequence, she has to somehow, out of sequence, find her way into the middle of these intense sexual, emotional, psychological things. Also, the therapy sessions with her and Robin Weigert is also amazing. They're shot, there's not too much cutting in them, so they're shot kind of in real time and sometimes with long lenses. So you don't have the benefit of her eyes. It's really her behavior. And it's just outrageous.
Is that shot in long lens without a lot of cuts because the subject matter is so intense that it would sort of disrupt the flow?
I'm not sure.
For the viewer?
I don't know. I mean, but the director clearly made the choice to kind of allow those therapy sessions to run in closer to real time than you're used to seeing. And why he made that choice, I don't know. Supporting actress, limited series or movie. Again, I think the feud people cancel each other out. I think that Regina King, who's one of my favorite actresses, again, is probably not going to win in this thing. Laura Dern is a much beloved Hollywood person who hasn't really won much of anything. She's hilarious on that show. I also think that show is going to win big. I think it's the other thing is I think the show that they're on became a very popular show. Michelle Pfeiffer showed up for the first time in many years on Wizard of Lies, and she's wonderful in it, but it's not really her movie. It's Robert De Niro's.
And that matters in this?
I just think that when...
When you talk about that movie, you don't talk about her.
You talk about
Robert De Niro.
About Robert De Niro.
And so that just gets back to the buzz, and you haven't seen it, and blah, blah, blah.
Correct.
Right.
Best Actor Comedy. If Donald Glover doesn't win, I'm going to go to Times Square and cry myself to sleep. I think he's a genius. I think that show is unbelievable. Here's what's amazing to me about that show, acting-wise. Basically, what the show is about, ultimately, is a bunch of guys that are bored out of their fucking minds and then occasionally have to go to a club or do this other shit. And that's hard to act. It's really hard to do.
Bored out of your mind, yeah.
Right? And
without falling into a trap of redundancy.
Yeah, and Lakeith Stanfield, who plays the stoner guy, and Brian Tyler Henry, who plays Paperboy. Donald Glover, Zazie. I mean, the whole cast is utterly fantastic. It's brilliantly written. But I think he's very, very special. And I would be very sad if he didn't win. So sad.
And you don't want to make Bob sad or mad.
No, because...
You won't like me when I'm mad.
You won't be glad if I'm sad or mad. Supporting actor in a comedy. Again, great group of people. But I think Veep...
You got Louis Anderson. You got... Titus Burgess.
And Louis Anderson got his Emmy, so he's not getting another one.
Right.
You have Tony Hale and Matt Walsh on Veep. I think they split a vote, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's a problem. Ty Burrell's on a show that's gone downhill quickly. Is this the guy who's been playing Donald Trump? Gee, I wonder if he'll win.
Who is that guy again?
Alec Baldwin. So... I just think again,
right?
You know, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is not a show that a lot of people have seen. And like I said, Louis Anderson won last year. I doubt that he'll win again.
Right. That show's liked by people in the industry too. It's sort of
absolutely
a darling like that. Best actor drama.
Best actor drama. Another extraordinary group of actors. I think personally in this group of all of these guys, all of whom are wonderful, that Sterling K. Brown on This Is Us. He's been a terrific actor for many, many, many years, theater, film, TV, and has really, it seems, come into his own in a big way. He was so amazing in that O.J. Simpson thing as Chris Darden. And I personally think he's the best thing on a really good show. I think, however, it wouldn't surprise me if Anthony Hopkins won Westworld. And it wouldn't surprise me if Bob Odenkirk won. But that's, again, I think that's more about the show than it is about him, ultimately.
Yeah.
Again, I take nothing away from any of these guys. Supporting actor, Ron Cephas Jones, around for a long time, terrific actor. David Harbour's wonderful. I think David Harbour's the best thing in Stranger Things.
I was thinking David, but I think I know what you're going to say about Lithgow, but go ahead.
Manny Patinkin, who also I love, but he's on a show that's, you know, like, oh, is that still on? It's one of those shows.
It's kind of like The Americans in that way.
But Jonathan Lithgow and The Crown, again, just as an acting teacher, it is a monster performance. And one of the things that's fascinating to me about it is, I don't know if you know this, Winston Churchill was not a very tall or big man, and John Lithgow is, in fact, a very big man. And yet he embodies that guy in a way that's really unbelievable. And also part of what's difficult about it, again, over a very long period of time, is he's at this point in his life, right, he's in ill health, but he's a very robust guy. So he has to get across somehow, in spite of the fact that he seems to be at death's door all the time, he's a volcano.
Right. So it's two emotions running against each other, sort of.
And he makes it look so easy. I just think he's amazing in that. Best actor limited series. I think probably Riz Ahmed will win, but I think that's not a good choice, which I'll explain in a minute. Benedict Cumberbatch is a victim of his own brilliance on Sherlock. Everybody's so used to him being brilliant on the show. It's sort of like, you know, sort of like LeBron James. He's not going to win the MVP every year because he's LeBron James.
Even though he might be the best. It's just,
amazing. And Robert De Niro, return to TV, we'll get some love. Jeffrey Rush isn't even the best thing on that show. And it's interesting to me because the guy who plays Albert Einstein as the lead, Johnny Flynn, the young guy, he's amazing.
In Genius.
Yeah, he's amazing because it's kind of hard to explain. He's playing Albert Einstein as a young guy. The guy's brilliant. He's driven. He also treats people very badly. And yet, but doesn't seem to realize it. He just doesn't get it.
Right.
Right. So like, you know, he'll say to his wife, oh, his wife who wrote everything for him, you know, and thank you to my friends, Bill and Dave and whatever, for helping me. And his wife looks at him, what about me? She's like, what about you? And really doesn't understand.
Doesn't get it.
And you feel for her because she's getting fucked.
Right.
But you're looking at him and you kind of feel bad for him because he clearly doesn't get
it. There's just something, there was a disconnect in his upbringing or or his mind.
And he conveys all of it brilliantly.
Yeah.
By the time you get to Jeffrey Rush, as an older guy, sort of settled in. And again, Jeffrey's a terrific actor, but I think what Johnny Flynn is doing is just flat out crazy good. I don't want to say anything about Riz Ahmed. I just don't think, all I'll say is, I don't think he should win. John Turturro, that is coming from an already great actor, is a tour de force and the part of a lifetime. And you have to remember that this show originally, that part was going to be played by James Gandolfini, right? And then he unfortunately obviously passed away.
Right.
And so Mr. Turturro not only had to go into the show, he had that hanging over him.
Right. Which has got to be like...
Yeah, that's got to be tough. But he just literally, the moment to moment is concentration, all the things that he does with the eczema. All of the behavior is just outrageous. And then supporting actor, too. I mean, I think Alfred, Lena, Stanley Tucci cancel each other out. Bill Camp is amazing.
I think he is too. I've seen him, but what in this? What is he doing that really blows you away?
Because he manages to convey, right? He's at really, in a lot of ways, he's at the heart of the story. And what he manages to convey is, in spite of the fact that you think he's sure about something, right? And this, you'll talk to cops, they'll do this all the time. They will present as committed to, I think you're guilty. But they may or may not think that. It's a way of actually manipulating and maneuvering And the way he sort of manipulates and maneuvers people around and gets them ultimately to tell the truth. And there's a scene with he and Jeannie Berliner in a court in, I think, the latter episodes. It's like a fucking acting clinic.
Really?
That being said, I wouldn't be surprised if Alexander Skarsgård wins for the same reason that Nicole Kidman. I mean, again, it's such a hard thing to sustain over a long period of time.
But almost every one of these choices has the merit aspect of it, but it's got some other aspect which people need to understand feeds the beast of the award ceremony.
And that's why sometimes the campaigning
brings
something to your attention.
Right.
And when you go to mark a box, like, well, I don't know, I didn't see all these, but boy, I remember Kate McKinnon singing the Leonard Cohen song.
Right. Kate, I like her. I like her in everything.
Yeah,
I didn't
so
see this.
We'll check that box. And so there's a lot of luck if you're on the actors, and just a lot of luck and timing and business. And
are you in a show that's dealing with a subject matter that happens to be hot in the in the conversation nationally? That kind of luck.
That kind
yeah.
of thing. Like you mentioned Transparent 2 years ago, it was a hot topic, and why not? And Jeffrey Tambor is amazing, so why
and
not?
And Bruce Jenner's going through his thing at the time. Right. Yeah, it's just feeding it.
And now it's not that hot a topic for whatever reason. And maybe that's good for the LGBT community because it maybe that I'm sure this isn't true. I was about to say because maybe things are becoming more normalized, which as it comes out of my mouth, I know is absolutely stupid. Sorry. But the show doesn't have the same kick. And so if you're dealing with people who haven't seen the shows, how do they pick?
Right. Well, this was fantastic. This opened my eye, and I'm in this business, and there's things about this that I didn't realize until we started talking about it at length. And I'm very glad that we were able to get this out. And I think it's, like I said, it's a nice companion piece to the episode we did about acting, because we've covered the art of acting and we've covered the business of show business.
Right.
And now the merging of the two in this conversation. And I think it's also a life lesson in general for people. Like, you know, you said the other day in class, like, just because I'm not an acting coach that doesn't have his name on the side of a building, meaning, you know, a giant studio of your own, doesn't mean, and we all say this, you're just brilliant at what you do. So sort of accolades are great and awards are great, but as you're saying, they got to be taken with a grain of salt.
Yeah, and I'm a big believer I'm a big believer in the process of work being its own reward. If you want a reward, go to work. I mean, I really believe that wholeheartedly.
Right.
I feel very, very, very ridiculously fortunate that when I go to work, I get to do something that I love every day.
But people should understand, I'm going to embarrass you. You've been told, like, get your own studio and start your own big business and blah, blah, and we'll back you, like, because you're fucking brilliant and you're teaching us not just how to act but how to sort of be human beings and how to take being a human being into this thing, and you just that's just not you don't want that stuff.
No, because like I said, I really do believe that work is its own reward. So as long as I'm in a room and you're in a room and we're in a room and we're knocking it around, The rest is absolutely not important.
Well, it's my favorite place to be in your class because it's pure. It's just about the work, and all that other stuff is on the outside. You know, Leno said, I don't get paid all this money to do what I do on stage. I do it for free. It's to put up with a lot of the bullshit off stage.
Yeah.
And it's kind of true, you know, but there's a purity in that with you, which I personally feel really fortunate that I can do that and be part of it. So thank you.
You know, you're the only person I'll talk to in front of other people.
Yeah, I know. And the nice thing is there's only one other person in the room here, and that's Roy. And Roy, I told Roy, do not look him in the eye. No. And so, and it was so fun doing the last one. And the last one we did, it just flew by like this. It's just fantastic. So that is Bob Krakauer.
Thank you.
You have an understanding of now awards and their significance or insignificance. And we're gonna see how this compares.
Yeah. Yeah.
But really great to do this with you. Love you, Bob Krakauer.
It's a lot of fun, Paulie. Anytime. Yeah.